Hey, it's David Kay, voice of Beast Wars Megatron and TFA Optimus. You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
You're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and in this episode of the podcast, well, I'm flying solo for a number of reasons. It's been one of those weeks where I've been extremely busy and kids have been sick and... So it seems to be the time of revivals or continuations thereof. And I say that because we've recently gotten, cause I'm a little behind, a Men in Black International trailer, which looks rather interesting for a reboot, continuation since the third film, kind of taking place in the UK. And then we get the news that Star Trek IV from Paramount is shelved for the most part because, yeah, there's really nothing going on there. And then the fact that there's Jason Reitman, Ivan Reitman's son, teased a new Ghostbusters movie taking place after the second one, so it'll essentially be third in the line. Totally disregarding the new reboot from 2016, which unceremoniously flopped due to fan backlash, refusing to go see it or give it a shot. Now, granted, I felt that the jokes and in the movie itself wasn't quite up to par, but the original movies weren't perfect either. So there is that aspect, which just makes it ridiculous that everybody's throwing a hissy fit over the film. But the trailer did look interesting. Showed somebody trying to mess with a broken proton pack, not really showing anybody in particular because it was probably just kind of a staff member kind of playing around. And then they showed like the wind blowing and then the Ecto-1 sitting on the ground kind of rusting. The rear end of it just shows up and then that's the end of it. I don't know. It could be interesting. We'll see how well this takes off, as it were. And then speaking of revivals, Supernatural on episode 300, they're touting an epic reunion. Now, granted, I haven't watched the show in a while, so I'm going to be a little behind. But they're bringing back Jeffrey Dean Morgan to play John Winchester, which is the father. Who died in season 2 to save Dean because the brothers have this penchant for dying every season or getting taken over by some angelic or demonic being. So it'll be interesting to see how they wrap him in the show because they'll actually have the entire family back together because the mom they brought back 2 seasons ago is kind of like a gift from the darkness. Which was kind of ridiculous in and of itself. But I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they do with it. If nothing else, I'll check it out for that alone. I would hope that they would keep him around in the universe, but I sincerely doubt it. Unless they kind of leave it open, which would be preferable. But I guess time will tell on that. And then finally, the thing that myself and Booth Ninja Michael Powers talked about a while back was the Motorola Razr folding phone, which was finally unveiled, or the knowledge of it. They're saying that, you know, and this is publicly now, it's not just some random website or anything. They're saying that the Motorola Razr may return as a foldable phone for $1,500, which is ridiculous. And the funny thing is the Motorola Razr V3, which is the one I had when I had Verizon, it was actually the only phone I had on Verizon before I switched to, Sprint and then AT&T. And then it was kind of dethroned by the iPhone because smartphones were the thing after that. And I gotta say though, I love the style and the futuristic look of the original Razr, just in the fact that it reminded me of a communicator from Star Trek. So I miss the original phone. I don't know if I could actually go back to the original phone, though. And then the folding phone thing, it remains to be seen how well this takes off. Now, granted, $1,500, I could buy a pretty souped-up a PC for that cost, fix like a number of things in my house. I could buy actually two, I could probably buy three laptops for that, or I could buy a Mac for that price. Like for a phone, for one phone, for a device, it's not, I honestly can't find the value in it. Spending that much, like I'm having a hard time spending or wanting to spend $200 to $800 on a new phone now. I'm still using a almost five-year-old Galaxy S5 smartphone because one, it still functions. Granted, the battery life just blows chunks, and I've had a replacement, and it still doesn't last very long. But it kind of makes me wonder, like, if we're outgrowing the items faster than what we need to. I guess it's just the new hotness. Gotta catch them all. Gotta upgrade. But I guess that it's going to be obviously the natural progression of the original Razer. I'm wondering how much of it's going to retain the style of the original one when it's all said and done, because I sincerely doubt people are going to want the bottom of the clamshell of the original Razer where it's not a usable screen of some sort. So I'm wondering how well they're going to do this, and how well it's going to emulate the original phone with its long and thin form now that Lenovo owns it. So yeah, we'll see how well. But I guess Motorola's kind of got a patent on some folding smartphone design that they since put into place in June, featuring a heated central hinge that would heal imperfections in the OLED screen caused by the bending. So while I'm interested to see how well that works, it makes you wonder how long it's going to work. And like Mike said, it's another gimmick. And so, like, I honestly don't know. Like, don't get me wrong. If the price was right, I would get one. But it's not going to be cheap at all, which means that the other phones should drop significantly with everybody trying to get on this gimmick. And then that's when I'll jump ship to a new phone. But it's touted to be around $1,500, according to various sources. While the Samsung Galaxy foldable is supposed to be like $2,500, which why would somebody do that? Like, I don't understand that. But I guess that's kind of the difference between myself and somebody who's trying to get the latest and greatest of everything. Now, one of the fun things that came out, they had CES last week, and the entire industry was all over it. So Google unveiled an instant translator. Yeah, a universal translator. It sounds a lot like Star Trek at this point. So I guess that, you know, in regards to their Google Assistant, they're trying to have this new built-in feature called the Interpreter Mode. So basically what it is a new feature that is a rollout as an update over the next couple of weeks on Google Home devices and smart displays. So if you're in a foreign country, you're meeting with a person who does not speak the same language as you, the Google Assistant can be used as a translator, or more so as an interpreter, to order to get real-time translations of words and sentences, as in when you speak in the form of voice output as well as text on screen to aid the conversation, which is kind of cool. It also kind of breaks down that language barrier of having to learn a new language or say something incorrectly and offend somebody and say something completely wrong. Because let's face it, English is about the only language where it kind of is what it is. And there's like multiple meanings for everything. And whereas like everybody else has like kind of more normalized speech patterns. But anyways, the interpreter mode can be triggered by saying, "Hey Google, be my French interpreter or Spanish interpreter or whatever." So if you want to translate it from or to French or replace with any language you want, and yeah, so but there's been a lot of tech that's been touted over the last year or two of translator tech and interpreter tech, and for Google to be finally getting on this bandwagon is kind of a big deal at this point. But it should be very impressive when this gets rolled out. I'll be looking forward to seeing, because I'm sure there'll be YouTube videos of it like crazy. Although it might be fun to get the Google Home and then ask it how to say things in a different language just to see what it says. So some more interesting things that came up at CES was Samsung introduced its first micro LED display. Yes, there is such thing as a micro LED. And if you're not familiar with that, it's like a very... It's basically the LED, but it's very small. And then it's supposed to have some kind of a significant improvement over standard LED televisions. It's hard to say whether it's going to like really take off. It could be just another one of those like gimmicks that kind of get thrown into the television world, but it only time will tell. But regardless, they showed it off at CES, and they used a 146-inch television to show it off. And yeah. Now, another interesting thing that came out too was Bell Nexus. It's basically an air taxi. It's got the vertical takeoff and landing structure, so it's got like kind of a wing structure with the helicopter propellers, and it looks kind of like a helicopter, albeit differently, and very much like a flying car, to put it lightly. So Bell, best known for building helicopters for 80 years, made its futuristic concept easier to visualize by building a full-size, glossy, black, slightly intimidating version of its proposed five-seater flying machine and dropping it in the middle of the transportation section of CES. It looks epic. It's like a cross, they say a cross between an electric helicopter and a person-sized drone, and has six duct fans that sit horizontally for liftoff, but then rotate to a vertical orientation for efficient forward flight. And they hope that it'll convince people that flying cars really are coming soon. Again, we'll see. They're hoping to have this in production and in full force by like 2025. So we'll see what happens. It's always interesting to see what comes out of CES because there's a lot of innovation, but there's also a lot of things that are there before its time. So I'm very interested in how this plays out, to be honest. And I love tech. And then of course there's a new TV by Vizio. It's the SmartCast, and so basically how the voice assistants aren't compatible with multiple things. The Vizio is one of the first companies to change that process by making it able to connect to Alexa or Google and Siri by showing off its SmartCast 3.0 and saying that the latest edition of its TV interface will work with Google Home, Alexa, and Apple's Siri over AirPlay 2. No matter what voice assistant you use, you can stream apps, adjust the volume, cast video, control smart home devices, and perform an ever-escalating number of tasks on Vizio TVs. But they're saying that there's going to be an update for new and old TVs later this spring to do this, which is kind of cool that you could do that in the first place. I mean, it's crazy how much stuff is powered by it. My father-in-law tried out his Google Home, and he has like lights hooked up to it. He has all kinds of equipment hooked up to it, whether it's smart bulbs or smart plugs. And it's quite interesting to see how far we've come into that Star Trek realm with technology. They're also touting that basically 5G, you might as well just forget about it for right now, because they're saying that it's going to change everything, and everybody's talking about it and everybody's predicting everything, and all these crazy capabilities and proclamations that are coming out. Basically, they're saying now that, you know, to see a real 5G, wait another year, because yeah, the device is designed to receive them, and the speed and the data signals won't be a reality for at least a year. Why the next generation cellular standard holds the next capabilities for the 5G. So they're saying that a lot of these demonstrations are very misleading and basically boasting that, oh, we're the first to offer a 5G network, even though they really aren't, because there's a lot of just basically the equipment's not fully there yet and fully integrated. Because they're saying that we should be able to have like Verizon 5G home internet with, they're saying that 5G connected devices should have like speeds of 900 megabits per second and, or up to, empowering, you know, Qualcomm having new chips that would be powering 30 plus 5G smartphones that'll launch in 2019. And so we really haven't had anything come out yet that's going to utilize it. And so I do kind of agree with that. But I guess they're saying that, that they're touting that there's going to be 10 gigabits per second to your phone, which is 600 times faster than 4G and 10 times faster than Google's fiber. That would be awesome, especially, you know, if you're downloading movies or you want like a 4K film from Netflix, or you know, if you're powering something that's on a vehicle, or just a variety of things. It just remains to be seen what they're going to do with it once it actually comes out. Yeah, but AT&T's got their smartphones, some of their new Samsung and LG saying 5GE in the phone status bar, which is evolution, not actually. It's supposed to signal faster speeds, however, it doesn't. And Verizon has been called out for, you know, it's 5G or new radio. It's not even fully 5G. So we're a little bit of ways before that comes. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy the stuff that comes out of CES. I always enjoy looking at all the crazy contraptions, and I'm still not excited for driving cars, but that are automated. But it's coming, and eventually, if they can get like things like 5G and all these satellites all kind of squared away, we'll see what happens on that front. But yeah, tons going on with that whole system. Like Hyundai showed off like a walking car at CES, where essentially like it stands up like it's a small model car, and you can activate robotic legs to walk at 3 miles per hour over rough terrain. So it literally can climb a 5 foot wall and jump a 5 foot gap. What reasoning you'd need to use that, I don't know, but it could be helpful if you're you know, trying to get somebody across something if there's like a natural disaster, an emergency, and then that's kind of why they developed it in the first place, is for that kind of scenario. But they're saying that the lot of the concepts, which they may or may not make it into production, it's great to think of new ways of mobility. But it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting. So that'll be something that we'll have to look forward to seeing if it actually takes off. And then Amazon Prime, I think we talked about this last year. They're saying that there's a way that they'll be able to deliver it to your garage with a key by Amazon, like a delivery service where they can physically put it in your garage instead of having it on your front door and get taken. So basically it would be called an Amazon key, or key by Amazon, because everything's by Amazon. But it's kind of, it's basically like a key for business service for the most part at the moment. But the integration is the Amazon owned Ring home security app and in garage delivery using Chamberlain's connected garage doors and new Schlage encode Wi-Fi connected locks added to the key program and other smart locks by Schlage, Yale, and Quickset. and it'll be interesting to see how that takes off. I don't know if a lot of people are going to subscribe to that. Like, I personally, and I agree with some of the reviews of thoughts on it, of that it's kind of intrusive, and I personally would not want some stranger dumping stuff in my garage or walking in my garage. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how well that's going to take off, but I can imagine if you're in a high going area, you may not want people just walking up and taking your junk off your porch and stealing it. So, you know, like Flint. LG also has a groundbreaking roll-up TV that's going on sale this year. It's a 4K TV that rolls up, and yeah, expensive. No, thank you. But yeah, it's supposed to have, you know, the regular design. They showed off a 65-inch rollable prototype at CES. With a 4K OLED TV, and it'll go on sale in the spring. It's going to have a 100-watt Dolby Atmos speaker for built-in audio. Yeah, it's got some kind of a setup very similar to when you see those displays at conventions, when people have their posters standing up with like the mount in the back of the posters that kind of fold up and everything. So what it does is essentially it'll slide into this base, which will essentially turn into a table after all said and done. And then the back will slide over and cover it up so that it completely encases where the TV went. Yeah, they've also got a mode on it called line mode, where the display will drop down so that only about 1/4 of the panel is showing, and they say that basically you can use it for, you know, music, so that you can just see what you're playing, and that's about it. It's going to have support for Alexa voice controls, as well as Google Assistant and things of that nature. I don't know, I'm interested, but that's going to be one expensive puppy there. They're going to have a ton of HDMI, USB in the back, from what they show, and it looks like it connects to the box, not to the TV. But it's going to have a ton of chips and tons of HDR color. It's supposed to be basically like a signature box of how it sets up. But that thing's going to be about $8,000 to start out. And they're going to start rolling those out around March. I guarantee you're not going to see many people having these things. And then for some reason they're making a big deal that MasterCard's dropping its name from the company logo, which... and then Intel, of course, has a new processor, which is coming out. It's supposed to be like the 9th-gen CPUs. Very, 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 very small. Very powerful. They're 10 nanometer processors dubbed Cannon Lake. Or Ice Lake. It's new Ice Lake design, which is what they're calling it now. It's supposed to be out for the holidays later this year. And they're saying it's going to have AI compatibility, Gen 11 graphics, connectivity with Wi-Fi 6, Thunderbolt 3, 10 nanometer architecture in higher performance. Very integrated and ongoing. So these are going to be on their new Core i3s and Core i9 chips, which I didn't know we were on the 9th generation of these Core chips, because I think I'm on the 4th gen on my computer here. And it runs great, but still, like, I didn't realize that I was that far in the Stone Age. Because I know that they're on DDR4 now for memory, and I have DDR3. I just recently plugged in. And this is the other thing, too. Since we last spoke on the podcast, I recently upgraded my computer to the latest version of Windows 10. Now, there's a couple reasons for that. I did it because, one, it's a security issue. It more so had to do with that more than anything else. Plus, my IT friends were ragging on me about it, about thinking in the Windows XP realm. And so I did the upgrade, and it had like three versions of Windows to upgrade over top. The benefit of doing so, though, there were benefits to this. It allowed me to free up a lot of space on my C drive. Now, granted, I moved my... I did manage to pull out... I don't remember if anybody remembers this story or not, but I ordered my first solid-state hard drive from Amazon like a couple years ago. And it was a Kingston 120 gig, you know, like $40 at the time. You can get, I think, 500 for like 60 now. But it didn't come. And then, so I contacted them. They overnighted me one. 2 weeks later, my other one shows up. Anyways, I've had this thing in the box for a while. Forgot why I never used it. Found an old 160 gig hard drive in my computer that doesn't work. I think it was my old C drive. And then, So I plugged this in, moved my Google Drive contents over to that drive so that it wasn't on my C drive. So that freed up a little bit of space. And mind you, I only had 10 gigs free at the time. So I installed the update. I managed to free up 28 gigabytes of Windows garbage from the 1500 series version of Windows 10. Now, mind you, we're on like 1809 or something now. So we've had like three or four different versions of Windows 10 since then, with anniversary updates and everything else. So I managed to clean up a lot of that using the new built-in disk cleaner, and it was able to scrub it clean. And then I was able to use it again because on my 500 gig hard drive that's my D drive, I had about 40 gigs of Windows garbage from when I had Windows 7 installed on there, but it won't let me delete it. And it was able to help me with that too. And so I was able to, again, all the way around, I was able to free up a lot of space. So anybody that's hesitant on getting off of an old version of Windows 10 at this point, there's really no reason to stick with the old one. And this is coming from somebody who fought it for as long as possible. The only thing I had an issue with when I upgraded was... I lost my sticky notes app, which you can get again, but I lost all the notes I had on there, so bummer. And I lost my ability to record initially, but I didn't know it until I went to do a recording on Tuesday. And then I had these MME errors and was unable to record anything through either microphone on any software, whether it be Skype or Adobe Audition or Audacity, would not record. Spent an hour and a half messing with it. Come to the conclusion, I install K-Lite codecs from Kazaa or K-Lite codecs. Anyways, installed them, everything came back, functioned brand new. So I say that to basically mean that if you're having problems, there's always a way around it. So just watch for that in the future. So I guess that's going to round it out for this episode of Alter Geek. Next week, we will have two episodes on Wednesdays for the next coming weeks. We'll have guest interviews, releasing one a week, every week, that I conducted. So I hope you guys enjoy those, and in the meantime, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, and if you have any questions, comments, suggestions for a future episode, be sure to drop them in the comments on the new GeekCastRadio.com or on Twitter, at Altered Geek or at SCP21. So until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks. I know I said this. See you next time.